Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for our post-Thanksgiving show. Typically, Thanksgiving is a week where nobody, you know, nothing much goes on in politics. There's not a lot of thought about politics, but in Georgia, the way they do the runoffs, that is not the case. So, of course, we still have things to talk about. Welcome, Catherine.
Hello.
Welcome, Tim.
Good evening.
Yes, well, I hope y'all's holidays were good.
Oh, yeah. Delightful.
Yeah, well, of course, Catherine, you got away from the political grind, if you will, but it's still going on down in Atlanta where you're a resident. Tell us about what you've seen or heard is going on in the mayor's race and city council and anything else.
Well, of course, I did go out of town for the Thanksgiving weekend, but when I returned, I had a voice message box full of robocalls from everyone reminding me to vote and who to vote for on Tuesday. So not as if I needed any help deciding, but apparently a lot of people thought I did. It seems to me, just from my anecdotal observations, that Kasim Reed is really picking up momentum, and Mary Norwood is losing a little bit of momentum. It seems to be the sort of general consensus. I think we talked about it last week, but it seems to be holding that way this week as well. I did watch the they had this live online forum. I can't remember what they called it. The Committee for Better Atlanta hosted it. And I did pay a little attention to that when it was on this week. And it was kind of interesting. I thought that Kasim Reed did very well. Amir Farouki did very well. I saw Claire Mueller for a little bit, and she was a little flat. I think it was a difficult format for her, just because it's, you know, this new media stuff, and I don't know if she was as familiar with, you know, sort of the general kind of mood of the, it was a live internet broadcast. But it was kind of an interesting thing, apparently not been done before for a municipal race, so it was kind of fun to be participating in something like that. And but, you know, I think it's all obviously all going to come down to voter turnout and what happens on Tuesday. I think we're all anxious for it to be over and anxious to move on and get a new mayor in place. And we did get news from Shirley Franklin this week that she's going to be teaching at Spelman starting in January.
Yes, I did see that. And speaking of folks you mentioned, Claire Mueller, she's been a very quiet candidate in all this race, at least from my perspective. That may not be yours or Tim's, but do you see what I'm seeing?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that there's just been a lot of attention paid to the mayoral candidates, partly because there were so many at first, and then now there's been, you know, a little bit of brouhaha around the two remaining runoff candidates. So I think they've stolen a lot of oxygen from the room so that we haven't heard as much about the other runoff candidates. And you know, to be fair, it's all very important. Those who are in districts that, you know, those districts need the representation on the city council. And the city council president is a really important role. They sort of serve as the leadership of the city council, and they work very closely with the mayor. So it's unfortunate that but it's very typical. You know, we always pay more attention to the presidential races than to our congressional races, and more attention to our congressional races than we do to our, you know, state legislatures, and more attention to the state legislature than we do the school board. So it's not a big surprise, I don't think.
Yeah, now Tim, what's your thoughts on the particular mayoral or any other race runoff?
Well, she pretty much said it all there. Turnout Tuesday, you know. And she also made another astute point that what we hear about up here is the mayoral race, and we really don't hear about the down ballot races so much. I will tell you this, because you weren't on looking at television today as you were at the Falcon game, but during the game, Kasim Reed had commercials on several times, which would be a prime spot to have them on. But Mary Norwood, I didn't see any of hers, and I was just wondering if she's been hitting the airwaves as heavily as he has, Catherine, do you know?
I haven't seen. I don't really watch commercials very much. Like, I change the channel a lot. I have seen more Kasim Reed, and I did get – I'm on both of their mailing lists, as you might imagine, and I did get a rather surprising fundraising email from Mary Norwood this week saying, no, we need money for these last – or I guess it was last weekend, maybe. You know, we need money for this last push to win the election, which kind of surprised me because I always thought she was pretty well-funded. So maybe it's a financial situation for her.
Yeah, because obviously the NFL games would be one of the more expensive things to advertise on, particularly in that time. Although the eyeballs you would be getting, particularly among male voters, would be bigger. So maybe that has to do with the demographic profiles.
That's true, too.
Targeting. So I mean, that sometimes comes into play as well. One thing I did see, and I'm not an avid local news watcher, on TV news at least, because I've just gotten tired of the bleeds at leads format. But for some reason, I caught this story where Representative Ralph Long had videotaped this gentleman picking up three or four Mary Norwood signs that had been just put out, and I believe it was near Northside Drive and MLK, kind of south of the Dome, I believe is the area it was in. And both sides claimed, of course, Ralph Long had said he believed that Kasim Reed, people had paid this guy to pick up these signs. But then the Kasim Reed camp said they had talked to the guy, and the guy said he was being paid by Ralph Long, through Mary Norwood, to stage the whole thing. It was kind of a he said, she said thing, which did not include the candidates by any means themselves directly. But Catherine or Tim, did you see this, and what did you make of it?
I heard it, the first part of it, when Ralph Long said that they were paying for that the Reed campaign was paying for these signs. And then I heard the rumor about it being Ralph Long, but I didn't know that they'd actually interviewed the guy.
Well, they were trying to find
the
guy.
The thing is,
yard
signs don't vote.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a tacky move. I mean, it's kind of like, then the truth, because you don't know what the truth is, so it really didn't help or hurt anybody in my calculation. I kind of think if you've had a strong feeling about one candidate or the other, you would just believe what that candidate said. But now if there was some conclusive, proof one way or the other, I guess it could mean something. It told me one thing, that Ralph Long had a lot of time on his hands, I'll say that, until to set this whole thing up. Tim, did you see this thing?
No, I didn't, David. But, I'm not surprised by stuff like that. It goes on in campaigns and this and that and back and forth. I don't think it's going to affect how anybody's going to vote on Tuesday. I think it's silly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so yard signs are the most sought-after, argued-over commodity in any campaign. And like you said, Catherine, you've had it happen in your neighborhood where everybody stole all your signs.
Yeah,
over.
Someone stole all our signs, but I'm glad to report that before we left last week, on Wednesday, we had five signs, and when we returned, they're all there.
Okay.
So no one took them again.
Thanks,
and all the
Catherine,
same signs.
Catherine, who's going to get their voters out Tuesday in the mayoral race?
I think Kasim Reed's going to take it.
Any prediction on the city council?
you know, I'm having a hard time with that. I think it's going to be very close in District 2, District 2 citywide, between Aaron Watson and Amir Farouki. I think it's all going to be about who gets their voters out, and, you know, it always is, but I think that's going to be tight. And I'm not sure about city council president either. I really thought that Cesar Mitchell was going to have it, but I've seen Claire Mueller has really been working the phones and the media pretty well, so I think that one's probably going to be close as well.
Yeah, now to me, I mean, since Claire Mueller and Mary Norwood are very similar in demographics and background they're from and all, and I guess not as much, but some with Kasim Reed and Cesar Mitchell, how many crossover voters do you find when you talk to folks in the city? I mean, how many Reed-Mueller voters are there, and how many Norwood-Mitchell voters are there?
I think that's the big question, and I think it goes back down into District 2 also, how many, you know, Watson, Reed, and Farouki, Reed, and
but
Watson.
Amir Farouki does change the dynamics a little bit from the other two ladies because, I mean, he is a man of
color.
Exactly. He's a man, so it's a little stickier calculus there.
Yeah, I'm having a very hard time. I've been thinking about that and trying to figure out, make some guesses about it. But I'm really having a hard time determining where the. I mean, I know a handful of people who are who were Lisa Borders supporters who are now Kasim Reed supporters that also support Claire Mueller. I honestly don't know how that's going to, I mean, of course I don't know, but I really don't have a good, handle on how that's going to pan out.
Yes. I mean, cause to me, that's going to be a big thing. If somebody could identify, you know, big portions of crossover voters in those sections one way or the other, that may, be a big indicator. But it's hard to identify. And obviously, you know, turnout, getting people out, because I mean, knowing that the actual first election had very low turnout, I'm expecting that, you know, there'll be a drop-off even further, particularly with folks, you know, going out of town, not hitting as much of the stuff, just getting back to the work week. It'll be the second day back after people have had, you know, a lot of folks have had at least 4 days off, if
all
not
right.
Longer.
Somebody explained this to me. On those commercials that I was mentioning today, they mentioned two endorsements. One was Lisa Borders. That makes perfect sense to mention that. The other name mentioned, and the only other name mentioned, Roy Barnes.
Not Jim Martin, what? Roy Barnes. Goodness.
Not Jim Martin, not anybody else. Roy Barnes. Not the mayor of Atlanta, not anybody. Roy Barnes. Why?
I don't know why that is such a big deal, but it is. I guess there's the belief that there's a lot of Roy Barnes supporters who, you know, live in the city and want to, you know, vote for whoever Roy Barnes supports. I don't know. I don't know why.
Because, yeah, I mean, you think these things get polled, but, I mean, and to me, like I said the other week, Jim Martin's endorsement, to me, it's huge given that his area he was the state representative for is very much overlaps where Mary Norwood's from.
But they got to know something, David. Those two names were mentioned for an obvious reason.
Yeah, and usually you have a candidate is in, you know, was in a race and endorses. That's kind of that's like a big deal. I mean, now, of course, the current mayor, you'd think that would have a lot of pull, but then, I mean, well, what's Phil's opinion of Shirley Franklin right now in the city? Catherine,
I think there's some frustration I think that just because there's the increase in crime or the increase in certain kinds of crime, I should say, and the financial circumstances surrounding the city and the county. Not that she has anything to do with the county, but I think that everybody, you know, sort of dumps on the mayor. And I think there's some, I mean, I'll be honest, I've always been a big fan of Shirley Franklin always was a supporter. But I think there's some frustration that she sort of checked out a little bit in the last year or so. She spent a lot of time in other places. She spent a lot of time on the presidential campaign and with the convention. And I think some people feel like she hasn't been as present in the city as we would hope that a mayor would be, especially as the city faces so many difficult circumstances. And I think there's some, I hear that from people, and I share it to a lesser extent than some others. But
yeah, I mean, because I guess part of my thinking is really there was a lot of messes that she inherited with the sewer system and whatnot, and so she was going to have to do a lot of dirty work that would not, you know, it would end up raising taxes, but it had to be done, and then there would be a light at the end of the tunnel, particularly for the next mayor. And then crime, to me, I mean, we're lucky in some ways crime is worse than it is, given the bad economy.
I'm not saying that it's all, like, legitimate beefs, but it doesn't always matter. You know, people are frustrated, and they take their frustration out on the most prominent, often take their frustration out on the most prominent person in leadership, and that happens to be Mayor Franklin right now.
Well, I think we're ready to segue on to the next discussion we have, and that's going to be Alabama politics. And, of course, when we want to talk about Alabama politics, we read up on Left in Alabama, and if we want to talk to the expert, we call Sherry that runs Left in Alabama. Welcome, Sherry.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yes, well, I know that the governor's race is just the hottest thing in Alabama politics right now, particularly, it seems more so, the Democratic primary. Just give us your bird's eye view on that Democratic primary for the governor's race.
Democratic primary, you're looking at Congressman Archer Davis, represents the 7th District, one of the minority districts, that have been set up around the country. And he's facing Agriculture and Industries Commissioner Ron Sparks. The big deal that Sparks is running on is gambling. He wants to tax it, control it, and regulate it, and he wants to expand it. He wants to try to get an education lottery, a little bit like what you folks have over there in Georgia. He's talking about expanding casino gambling, letting people vote. And this has all come up before in Alabama. Don Siegelman got elected back in 98 on an education lottery, which failed. And we've had initiatives to allow more gambling, and they've frequently failed. So it's not a sure thing. But Sparks says we just flat don't have enough money in the state, and gambling is a way to get more money. On the other hand, Davis is running on reform. He's not part of the Montgomery establishment. He wants to do some real serious ethics reforms in Montgomery. No gifts from lobbyists, full disclosure, complete transparency, none of this shuffling money around from one political action committee to another. I don't know if y'all do that in Georgia, but it's just rampant here. You have no idea where the money is coming from that goes into these politicians' coffers. So that's the kind of thing that we've got going on here, and it's getting fairly heated. The last time these guys appeared together in a debate, it was all of the gubernatorial candidates, Democrats and Republicans, and they got pretty snippy with each other. So.
Right.
Of course, it's getting a little hot on the Republican side too. We've got a Republican getting death threats, so. You know, it's just Alabama politics is exciting stuff.
Well, we'll get there, too. Now, are there any other, like, also-ran Democratic candidates, or is it just a two-person race?
I think there is one other whose name I don't know, and it's not someone that's viewed as having even so much as a snowball's chance.
Well, if you don't know their name, that is the pure definition of an also-ran. Of course, I've got more questions, but I don't want to take them all up, so I'm going to pass it over to Catherine first and then from there to Tim.
Well, I'm interested about this gambling. I just got back from Las Vegas. I was there for the holiday weekend, so, of course, gambling is fresh in my mind. I'm curious, what's the general feeling about increasing gambling in Alabama? What does the public think?
It's really hard to say. You know, about half the public thinks that we don't want any more gambling, and about half of them think that, well, you know, maybe it would be some revenue, and why have to drive to Mississippi or Georgia to buy a lottery ticket or do a little casino gambling? You know, it's that kind of a thing. When it comes to a vote, assuming Sparks got elected and got his proposals through the legislature, it would go to a vote of the people, and then you would have the special interests getting involved in spending huge amounts of money to influence public opinion like they have done every time this has come up. It's absolutely not a sure thing that anybody could get this past the people. Once you get, as we call them, once the Baptists get involved, it's going to be very tough to pass it.
So you have no lottery at all?
No, we have no lottery. In terms of gambling, bingo is legal in some counties.
That's
been construed to include electronic bingo, which are they're machines very like slot machines.
Mm-hmm.
And currently the governor, who's a Republican, is having a major fight with the attorney general. The governor says, no, those are illegal slot machines. The attorney general says, also a Republican, by the way, says, no, no, it's bingo. And the courts have just ruled, the Supreme Court just ruled that, indeed, those are illegal machines. And apparently the tribal money from Mississippi is involved again. This all gets back to the gubernatorial race. You've got one Republican who released a polygraph statement that, you know, he is swearing to the fact that, that Governor Riley received $3 million from the Mississippi Band of the Choctaw Indians.
Wow.
Particularly to keep legal gambling out of Alabama so as not to cut into their revenue. It's going to be all gambling all the time, I think, in this race.
That's really interesting. And so you've got one, a Republican who's supporting gambling and a Democrat who's supporting gambling, and or are there no Republicans supporting gambling?
There is at least one, and possibly more than one. It's a big field on the Republican side. And in the Attorney General's race, there's you know, the incumbent Attorney General is absolutely supporting gambling, supporting the electronic bingo. And these parlors have sprung up all over. In every county where bingo is legal, they've put in this electronic bingo stuff. Just, I guess this coming week, they're about to open Country Crossing down in the Dothan area. It's a big casino-like establishment.
It's just full of electronic bingo machines.
Like an electronic, you know, a gambling paradise, only all they can do is bingo. And I think they're going to have, you know, country music stars coming in. It's like a little chunk of Las Vegas. But the question is, are they going to be able to have the machines or not? They're opening this week.
Wow, that'll be really interesting. I'm going to have to keep my eye on that. Tim, do you have a question?
Yes, I do. This deal about the Republican gubernatorial candidate receiving death threats, I mean, what's the deal with this? Is this a hoax? Is it for real, or do they know?
They don't know. He's certainly received things. I've talked to people who have seen at least copies of what he received. The postmaster apparently flagged one of them. Because there was some stuff on the outside of the envelope. There was a photograph of, you know, the guy. It was a picture from back in the Vietnam War days of a colonel holding a gun to a guy's head, you know, just fixing to shoot him. And they had photoshopped Bill Johnson's head onto the guy about to be shot.
Oh, goodness.
That was on the outside of the envelope. So the postmaster seized it and began an investigation. And apparently that was one of five or six. And that one was purported to be from the Alabama Democratic Party. And, of course, they deny everything and probably would not be so foolish as to use their own letterhead to send death threats. And
well,
they wouldn't have any reason to.
Why would this particular candidate be targeted? Is he controversial in some way that would draw this type of person to him? Or
it's the gambling thing.
Ah,
he's not been particularly controversial up until a week or so back when he released his polygraph test. And he used to work for Bob Riley, the current governor. He worked on his campaigns for Congress. He worked on his campaigns for governor. And he says he is swearing that Riley took $3 million of Indian money. And this goes back to Scanlon and Abramoff, to that whole mess. And it was money to keep gambling out of Alabama. So, yeah, he's taken off some people that might potentially make death threats.
Wow. David, you want to follow up there?
I tell you what. So it sounds like both sides are getting interesting. But getting back to the Democratic side of the primary, recently Ron Sparks not only talked about gambling, but he also talked about the health care bill, brought national politics into it. And we talked about how this was, in some ways, refreshing. You had a white Southern candidate being to the left of an African-American candidate on national issues. And it shows that, you know, the old stereotypes aren't always there. What are folks making of this in Alabama?
That's exactly right. The old stereotypes don't always hold. And especially in the South, I think you have more conservative black members of Congress from the minority districts than you might think. I mean, you look at these districts that vote 90% Democratic, and you think, oh, they must be really liberal, but they're not necessarily that liberal. And Sparks has been to the left of Davis on health care for sure, and has been really talking that up. Now, He's gotten in a slight embarrassment on that because they appeared at a candidate forum sponsored by the Business Council of Alabama back in August, and Sparks said he opposed the current health care bill and that he was glad Congress was slowing it down. And as soon as he started pounding Davis a little bit on that health care vote, Davis voted against the House bill. He kind of tossed those words back at Sparks, and he's had to. He would have been in a much stronger position if he had come out from the very beginning, first time he was asked, and said, "Yes, I support reform. I support the bill in the House. I support the public option." He didn't do that. He jumped on it a little bit late, so it has not been quite as good a thing for him as it might have been. But
yeah,
it's refreshing. That part is.
Yeah, that does seem contradictory, and glad you brought that to our attention. Additionally, on that same vein, Jesse Jackson Jr. criticized Arthur Davis, actually criticized that he could really be a black man opposing the health care bill. What do folks make of that?
I really think that has probably helped Davis a lot in Alabama. And it's not helped him with everybody, the people that wanted him to vote for the health care bill. A lot of them think that Jesse Jackson's remarks were right on target. On the other hand, a lot of us who wished he had voted for it look at that remark and say, why do you need to bring race into that at all? It's not a black and white issue. It's an issue for everybody. Race is just pretty much irrelevant to it. And then the people that And Alabama is full of people that don't like Jesse Jackson. Those people have had their eyes opened to Arthur Davis now. They say, oh, Jesse Jackson doesn't like him. Wow, I'm going to give him another look. So I suspect Jackson did Davis a favor, especially if it comes down to the general election.
Yeah. Well, I know that we need to have some talk about some national races, and I'll start it off, and then once again I can pass to Catherine and Tim on the congressionals. The U.S. Senate race, Richard Shelby's up for election this year, has no candidate running against him. Is there a candidate that will step out there and run against him on the Democratic side?
I haven't heard of one. And I don't have any hope for a high-profile candidate at all.
Not a
sniff. Shelby has $13 million. He's not going in with him.
Yeah, that is something else. Not even a thought of a candidate running.
Yeah.
And you'd be in the know. So, I mean, that doesn't, seem like it's real likely then that it would happen.
I just there's been no rumor of anybody to this point, and I just don't see anyone stepping out. You know, there's no high-profile Democrat that's not already spoken for.
Yeah, aside from the $13 million, what's the vulnerability of Richard Shelby?
Not much.
No.
Not much. I'm sorry. I mean, I wish it was different, but no, he's unpopular with people like me. But the casual voter is perfectly happy. Richard Shelby brings home the bacon like nobody's business.
Yeah. Just curious when I saw that, anybody would step up, because I know there was a candidate of some note that stepped out to run last time against the other senator, Sessions. But I guess the popularity there is much higher for Shelby than Sessions.
No, I think the popularity is just about the same. It's just that Shelby has been in there a lot longer. He's seen as much more of an institution, impossible to dislodge, and he's got a lot more money. He, you know, Sessions had a war chest, but he didn't have anything like this amount.
Yeah. Well, I'll pass it over to Catherine and Tim on national questions. Catherine?
I don't have anything right off the top of my head. Go ahead, Tim.
Oh, wow. The question is, I mean, you talk about not having a viable Democrat to step forward to run in a U.S. Senate race. It hasn't been so long ago that the thought of that would have been unthinkable. What is the state of the Democratic Party in Alabama if they can't field a viable U.S. Senate candidate?
Oh, man, why don't you ask me an easy question?
It's okay. It's okay. We got our problems here, too. So,
yeah. Let me just tell you that what people have told me about Shelby. You know, I guess he was up in 2004, and somebody did run against him. And it was not a particularly viable candidate, but it was a guy that got out and campaigned around the state and talked about Shelby and, you know, did what could be done. But I was told at that time that the state party did not support that person because, and this is liable to blow your mind, but the feeling is that they don't want anybody to run against Shelby because they don't want Shelby to, quote, open up that war chest and drown every Democrat on the ticket. It makes no sense to me, but that is the thinking.
Yeah, it
okay.
Seems like you want them to spend the money there instead of spreading it all over the state or all over the country. But
well, yeah. I mean, in our state, that happens sometimes too. Where they the Republicans will purposely not run a candidate against the Atlanta congressman because they don't want him to get his machine out, if you will.
Uh-huh.
So they do that same kind of thing here in a different way. So I've seen those calculations before, although in statewide races that are considered the top of the ticket. That's not a real aggressive strategy, to say the least. Well, I guess staying with national stuff, y'all got three congressional races, two in the general and one in the primary stage that are pretty hot contests. And I think we'll start with our primary one, District 7, to replace Congressman Davis. What's that race look like?
Again, it's a big field, and the primary is going to be the race there. Terry Sewell is an attorney. She has roots in Selma. She has raised a lot of money. She's not particularly well known, but she has certainly been very successful at raising money. I don't think she's gotten any kind of messaging going yet, but I think you're going to have to watch her very closely. She might actually be kind of progressive. None of them have come out hard on any issues yet. And their websites are all really subpar. But I would say watch Terry Sewell. Earl Hilliard Jr., his father held that seat before Archer Davis unseated him. He's currently in the state legislature. He's got good name recognition, and the Congressional Black Caucus just endorsed him. So he's not been as successful raising money as Sewell, but he's somebody to definitely watch. He has probably the institutional backing in the district to really be strong. And the other candidate that I would watch closely is Sheila Smoot in Birmingham. She's on the Jefferson County Commission. And that is the only negative thing I know about her. The Jefferson County Commission is a huge mess. She has not been indicted, but many of her colleagues on that commission have been indicted. Some have been convicted. It's a very dirty environment she's coming from, so she's got an uphill climb there. She's a real good campaigner, and she is talking about some issues a little bit. Jobs.
Yes, and so because that's to me the pretty critical race, and that person's going to be one of the leaders of the Democratic Party in Alabama just because they do have a safe seat, if you will.
Absolutely, absolutely, and should be, like we've said, should be the most liberal congressperson from Alabama. And
yeah.
I would love to see a real progressive person in there, but I'm still trying to figure out who that might be in this field.
Oh, yeah, well, don't you mean? Well, then looking at the other two races, the targets for the Republican Congressional Committee, both 2 and, I believe, 5, 2 and 5, you can attack them either the Huntsville District or the Montgomery District first and the other.
I don't know much about the Montgomery District. Bobby Bright has the worst voting record of any Democrat in Congress. But he seems to be pleasing his district pretty well. I don't hear the kind of complaints about him that I hear about Parker Griffith. I think everybody knew he was going to be real conservative when they elected him. He's got a couple of opponents already. One of them is a city council member from Montgomery. I can't remember who the other one is. But Bright, it's a tough district, but I think he's probably doing as well as he can in that district. Parker Griffith's people, his constituents, and I am one of them, are deeply disappointed with him. He not only votes like a Republican, he talks like a Republican. His press releases could be coming directly from the morning talking points the RNC puts out. He's just been a real disappointment that way. He's the one that a while back he said that Nancy Pelosi needed a gift certificate to a mental institute or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And he said a couple of times, maybe 3 times now, that he would not vote for her as speaker again. You know, Bobby Bright has not said that. He doesn't go that far. So if the election were today, I feel sure Griffith would lose just because Democrats wouldn't vote for him.
He'd lose to the left.
It would just simply leave that one blank.
Yeah.
And don't forget, in the congressional races, don't forget the third district, where we've got Josh Siegel making another run at Mike Rogers. And Siegel came really close last year when he had very little funding and very little institutional support. So I think that's going to be one to watch, too.
Yeah, I guess the environment's a little different, but then he may actually get a little more support. So
yeah, he started earlier. He's raising more money. It looks like the D-Trip is going to back him this year maybe. And Rogers, he's already had some success, I would say, because Rogers has moved left in his voting record. So that's one reason that you should absolutely challenge these people, because if you give them a good scare, they'll start voting in a better way.
Yeah, and that district, I guess, is Gadsden the biggest city in that district, or Anniston? Or?
Well, part of Montgomery is in that district, so it's hard to say.
Because it goes so far up and so far down.
Uh-huh. It's like almost the whole state line with Georgia.
Yes, it's a tremendously long district all along that part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, well, of course, we've covered what we can see in Alabama politics. Is there anything else that we missed that we should discuss?
I'm not in a very good position to discuss this, but you guys were talking about the elections in Atlanta. I would mention that Birmingham is electing a new mayor. I believe the 8th, I think. It's not this week, but the following week. And that is because their mayor, Larry Langford, was convicted on corruption charges and had to be replaced. And that's going to be a very interesting one to watch. What is turnout like in your elections over there? In Birmingham, it's less than 20%, maybe less than 15% in some of these city council and mayoral elections.
Yeah,
it was 24% in the original election. We expect, you know, not even half that for the runoff.
Wow.
For the city of Atlanta.
That's horrible, isn't it?
So it's like 35,000 people deciding on the mayor of the, you know, arguably one of the most important cities in the South or
mm-hmm.
even in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... But any ideas on what kind of candidates are running for that race?
I don't have a list of candidates now. The lady that was on that was the acting mayor up until last week is Carol Smitherman. She is running. Richard Arrington is not running. There's a big enough field. There will probably be a runoff. And a number of them are people that have been active in city politics before. And like I said, it's not a pretty environment down there. They've had a lot of folks, not only indicted but convicted of corruption charges in the city and the county government in Jefferson County. And the county is almost bankrupt, probably should be bankrupt.
Yeah, Yeah, we were talking about the Atlanta mayor's race. I have the feeling from what I've heard of Birmingham politics that Atlanta's politics looks like just, you know, heaven, if you will, to Birmingham voters. It is a much bigger mess.
I think so. I think they would all love to have, I know they'd love to have the 24% turnout. Because the 15% number, that wasn't a runoff. That was the city council election.
Yeah. So.
And you can understand with all of the bad publicity and the corruption charges, the voters just really don't want anything to do with it. They've thrown their hands up in despair.
Yeah, and I guess being on such a strange date of December 8th, when you would think mm-hmm. it would have been on the traditional election day, I guess, of the first Tuesday in November, that couldn't have done anything but help turnout, but instead it's a month later.
Well, it's a month later because the mayor got convicted and had to step down.
Oh.
And he was only convicted, I think it was in early November. So
they probably had to have 30 days.
Yeah.
Minimum.
Oh, okay. That makes it a little different.
Yeah, and you know, having your mayor convicted, I'm sure that's really going to inspire people to want to go out and vote for these folks, especially since it is some of the usual suspects.
Certainly so. Well, Sherry, thanks for joining us and keeping us updated on Alabama politics.
Thank you. It's been fun. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. And thanks for your work on Left in Alabama, too. We always appreciate reading about it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right,
bye.
Well, I was trying to do some research on the mayor's race here, and it's hard to even find out who's running, so you can tell this thing has just been a whirlwind getting people in it, and I'm glad Sherry brought that to our attention, you know, among other things. Well, I think we had some other topics to discuss, and one of them, of course, is South Carolina always in the news, Governor Mark Sanford. Looks like impeachment may be moving forward. More has been done on that. Tim, what do you know?
Yeah, they put together a group of, I believe, 7 legislators, and they came back with something like 36 different counts, possible infractions, possible violations of the law, stuff ranging from violating his office by leaving the country and not letting anybody know, not leaving any anything in place, any leadership team, all the way to misappropriation of funds for various junkets and things, which would be a far more serious thing. And this stuff is being pushed by the Republican leadership to David, which makes me think that the guy is a dead man walking. The Republicans are really lucky that this is a deep red state, because the governor seems content to try to ride this thing out for some reason, even though every big South Carolina politician, even up to Senator Graham and some of those folks, have you know, implored him to step aside. I just don't know why he continued to do this, unless he's in total denial. But I believe they're going to impeach him now. We'll know in January when the legislature convenes, because that's when it'll move, and fast.
Oh, yes. And so I have to wait on that day. I guess moving to another state out to Texas.
I just want to interrupt one second. And did everybody hear that Jenny Sanford is writing a book?
I did not see that, but does that come as any surprise to anybody?
It's called Staying True, and it's coming out in April, a memoir. So as his career is fading, it looks like hers might be brightening up. Anyway,
yeah.
I'm sorry. I just wanted a little bit of, additional information about that.
Oh, yeah. And so, that release should be, it should have interesting chapters in the book as well. It's probably not one that I would, want to go out and buy and read cover to cover, but I'm sure little excerpts here and there could be interesting, to say the least.
She's also endorsed a candidate to succeed her husband.
Oh, okay.
The only woman running running for governor.
So she's supporting a man to replace herself.
No, a woman to replace her husband.
No, a man to replace herself.
Oh, right. I see what you're saying. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. And so, so she's gotten active and looking at that too, I guess. But the interesting thing is she didn't support Andre Bauer to replace her husband now, meaning that I guess she's not calling for his impeachment as well.
Yeah, I guess not.
I guess that might be
a little too much.
That would make her the only major political figure in Republican politics in South Carolina not calling for his resignation. And speaking of that race, if you will, Tom Jensen, who was on the show last week, he put a poll up, and I think he alluded to that last week. And right now, the South Carolina governor's race, which I would think would be an interesting race, is running fourth. It's running behind the Georgia governor's race, the Delaware Senate race, and the Illinois primary, I guess just for governor. People want to see all three of those races polled more than South Carolina. I'd have to say I could see where certainly Delaware was very interesting. Georgia being a big state, but I would think South Carolina might bode well a little bit better than that.
Well, maybe everybody
can just see him go away.
Yeah, I think we're all tired of him. Maybe we feel like maybe if we don't give him any more attention, he'll just shut up and go away.
Yeah, but I guess that's moving to the next stage. Maybe they would poll on, do you think that, the governor should resign? But I'm sure the poll would also be, who do you want to see win this thing? But it was good to see that Tom Jensen was putting that up for people to vote on, but it's got 12 more hours, so looking at the results, I would have to think, unless there's a drastic difference, the Delaware Senate race is running away with this thing by almost a 2-1 margin over Georgia and Illinois. But that poll will be done, and so no matter what, we'll probably talk about it in some fashion. Who knows? Maybe they'll get enough money and they'll poll all three. Another poll that kind of caught my eye, and that was the Daily Kos did a poll on the Senate race, and the actual just top line number was not surprising. It says Rubio's quickly catching up. He's gone from 57-4 to 47-37. That's what every other poll we see says. But did y'all see the numbers underneath where it said it looked at two polls, actually. One was Obama born in the United States. CRISP voters say 73% yes, 31% no. And then, of course, the math doesn't quite add up because there's another 33% not sure. And then Rubio voters, 16% yes, 54% no, 45% not sure. I'm not exactly sure on the math here. Apparently they let you say no and not sure and yes and not sure or something, but still you can tell a difference. CRISP, actually, I see what's going on. It's the you have to go yes and no up and down. CRISP says and no. Basically, you can tell, though, that CRISP voters are much more likely to think President Obama was a born U.S. citizen as opposed to Rubio voters. And this says a lot about the type of voters that are supporting each candidate. And to me, this kind of is a preview that, you know, Rubio is going to continue to do well. Tim?
Yep. Yeah, I certainly agree with you. He may be taking this race over, David. He has actually won 13 consecutive straw polls at various GOP meetings. These right-wingers love him. Some of the out-of-state crowd is jumping on his bandwagon. They're actually willing to chance losing the general election in order to beat Chris, who they despise. I think Rubio may beat him in the primary now. I wouldn't have believed that some time back. It seems suicidal to me that they would do this, but it's beginning to look to me like they're going to do it, because I'll tell you one thing about these right-wingers. They'll show up to vote. They're spitting nails, and they will show up to vote more passionately than will the CRISP supporters.
And they continue to poll this thing, and I tell you what, Kendrick Meek may actually start helping Rubio win, because in a Chris-Meek matchup, he loses 50-33, but in a Rubio-Meek matchup, he wins 38-30, obviously a lot of undecideds, but then you'd have to think a lot of those undecided voters then peel off and go to him once they see exactly how right-wing Rubio is. So to me, it's basically... It looks like Meek's chances may be decided on the Republican primary night.
I agree with you completely.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely the case.
I mean, it even says, like, if you look at if Chris runs as independent, it's a three-way race with him barely beating Meek, but it's in the margin of error. Rubio gets to 27%. I mean, basically, it's all probably margin of error all three ways if it's like a, you know, five-point margin of error. And then of course, if they turn Chris into a Democrat, he wins 45-34, and I'm sure a lot of Democrats are probably scratching their heads, and they become in the undecided camp because they're like, what? Well, these are our choices, the two Republicans. So interesting polling, not just the simple, baseline numbers we're used to seeing. I thought that Research 2000 and Daily Kos did a good job on that poll. Moving around to another state, and this kind of previews for next week, Juan LaFonta, who is the legislative black caucus chair in Louisiana, also a member of the House of Representatives for Louisiana in the New Orleans area, has announced for House of Representatives nationally for Congress, facing Joseph Cao. And Joseph Cao is considered the most endangered member of Congress, and certainly the most endangered Republican member of Congress, but he's announced, and he's actually going to be a guest next week, but it's still an interesting race nonetheless. Does it look like this makes it even harder for Joseph Cao, Catherine?
Yeah, I think it does. I mean, I think we have two really good Democrats running.
The other one I think is announced is Cedric Richmond. And Cedric Richmond, I believe he actually endorsed or actually supported William Jefferson last time or two times ago. Recently he had actually said he didn't believe he should resign. So I think that makes his candidacy a little trickier. Tim, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, Barack Obama won this district by over 50 points. I believe that says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you would think New Orleans, and more voters are probably coming back.
And he's only in office because of Jefferson, you know. I could have gone down there and run as a Georgia resident and won, you know.
Well, you'd be better than Joseph Cal. So,
well, yeah, that's true, but you see my point.
Yeah,
he was just the beneficiary.
Yeah, and so, he caught lightning in a bottle, and now he can put, you know, member of Congress on his obituary. I mean,
yeah, and pretty soon ex-member of Congress.
Well, you know what I'm saying. You know, you can't. Yeah. Once he has it for 2 years, he once has it for 2 days. You can never take it away from him. Yeah, well, I guess the final topic we'll try to get to is Texas. There are two sometimes Texans that are being talked about as running for president. We've talked about Dick Cheney before, and I'm telling you, I think it's a good idea for the Republicans for who they are. But the drumbeat grows louder. And then the newest one, Lou Dobbs had a cushy job in Atlanta and decided to quit it, if you will, because he just couldn't stand what was going on in the borders of America, if you will. And he's looking at running for president more, I guess, as an independent. Give me
I
your
thought.
I thought
he was also talking about running for Senate in Connecticut.
Yeah, but I think actually he's looking more at he's also looking more at president, because, you know, his residency is a tricky deal. Apparently some of us say in New Jersey. Obviously he cut his checks from Atlanta and Georgia. He's a former Texan. Now you're saying, you know, and they got Vince McMahon's wife running there in Connecticut. Do they need Lou Dobbs when they got the head of World Wrestling Entertainment running? I mean, what do you need?
If he runs in a national race as an independent for president, he draws about 14%, according to the latest polling. And he pulls nearly every bit of that from the Republicans.
Exactly. Run. Yeah. I mean, you know. And to me, this makes a lot of sense that this could be a year where a third-party candidate runs and you know, makes it to where, you know, Barack Obama needs to get 50% now. He could get, 48.
Well, I mean, Bill Clinton revisited there. President Clinton never got 50% of the vote in either one of his races. Didn't need to. He won easily, too.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it would just make it, you know, all the easier to do. And actually, I was looking at that Connecticut Senate race, because I think I remember somebody saying somebody was going to run for Connecticut Senate. But, Ralph Nader is actually looking at.
Oh, is it Ralph Nader? Oh, Lou Dobson must be somewhere else.
It's Ralph Nader, which I don't know if that, I just don't know that anybody falls for that trick anymore. not enough voters to count, so I don't know that that'll be Chris Dodd's undoing. Something else may be. But, of course, we're not Connecticut political experts, since the Mason-Dixon line is on the other side there. But then, kind of previewing for next week, we didn't get into it this week, but next week I think we all need to do our homework, and I'll let people kind of in on this. We're going to talk and maybe make a little rankings, if you will, of what states in the South have the hottest political scenes and which have the coldest. Now, obviously, some things are going to be the calendar. If you just don't have races coming up, then how can you be hot? But there's still plenty of states that have races, and some are just hotter than others. And I think all of us can kind of unveil our rankings, if you will, maybe even a merged one, and let those happen next week, along with Representative LaFonta coming on, running for Congress. And who knows what else we'll get into. But until next week, it's been the Kudzu Vine. Catherine,
Thank
Tim.
You. Thanks, guys.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.